In an ever-changing world, Life Changes Network presents a show about everything. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with unforgettable, ever-insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real-life journeys. This is a conversation that matters as we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live. Always remembering, life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before, with tonight's guest, author of The Forbidden Archaeologist, Michael Cremo. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Thank you, Mark, and ciao, everyone. I am very excited about today's show because we have Michael Cremo on the show. He was really hard to get, and he's been very busy because he's doing some really exciting things all around the world, and he's writing a couple new books. And I have to tell you, the very first time I saw Michael speak in person was the first time I knew of his work. And as I sat there listening to him, I didn't know whether I should be excited or whether I should be angry. And I just decided I would be excited and angry at the same time for as long as it was serving me, because I had to get a grip on what I was hearing and the fact that I had not heard this before. The what I was hearing part was exciting. The fact that I had not heard it, that was the part that was like angering me. And I not at Michael. I was grateful for Michael for bringing this information out. And I'm so glad that here at Life Changes, we're helping even more people hear this information. And maybe you all might have the same feelings while you're listening. Let me give you an example. Actually, pleasure of being with my niece on one particular morning as I was about to leave to go out of town, and she had one of her teeth fall out of her mouth. It was one of her baby teeth, and so my mother was there as well, who was also leaving, and so we all know the story of the tooth fairy. And evidently, my niece had been taught this story. Now, she's at that age where she's starting to question these kinds of stories. Now, whether it's right to have told her there was a tooth fairy or not, I'm not sure. We can argue that point, but that's beyond the scope of this particular show. The fact of the matter is, somebody had told her there was a tooth fairy. Let's just start with that. And at this point, my mother, who wanted to participate in giving her a gift to kind of share in the excitement of the moment as she lost her baby tooth or yet another one, and not knowing whether she should go with the tooth fairy thing, kind of conferred with my brother and sister-in-law and decided that since she wouldn't be there to see her excitement in the morning after my niece woke up and the money and the note was underneath the pillow, as the story goes, my mother decided to put money and little gifts throughout the house, hidden under planters or behind plants and underneath my niece's tricycle and that kind of thing. So when my niece came back into the room, my mother said, "I believe the tooth fairy has left you something." And my niece said, "Under my pillow?" And my mom said, "No, I think she left you something behind the plant." And so my niece found the money and kind of had this smirk on her face like, "Wait a minute." And then you know, my mother said, "Maybe there's something under your tricycle." And I could tell my niece was excited to have the money or the little gift. At the same time, I could tell that she was thinking, okay, there's something going on there. How would grandma know? Or is there really a tooth fairy? Or, you know, something's going on in her head. And right now, or when I first heard Michael speak, I kind of felt like my niece going, okay, wait a minute. Somebody told me there's a tooth fairy. Right or wrong, I bought into that story. But now, it seems like the clues are here and there, and people like Michael are bringing them out. I want to know the truth. Enough of this, okay? Just tell me there's no tooth fairy. Tell me exactly who's putting this money there. I'll still be grateful for it, whatever. Just enough. You know, I'm old enough. And I feel like as a civilization, we are old enough. We are mature enough. Whether we might have been all of this time, maybe not. I don't know. But I think it's time we know the truth. And these clues that we're seeing here and there, what does this mean? Where do we really come from? And I don't even know if I want to know why somebody lied. It doesn't matter. It might have been out of their ignorance or out of their greed or whatever. It doesn't matter. I want to know the truth. Who am I? Where do I come from? What's the true history of mankind? That's what I want to know. And those are the kind of questions that Michael Cremo has tackled in his books and in his speaking. And this is the thing. Michael has spoken all over the world, and he's been invited to speak in universities and in important areas where other professors and doctors and whatever doctorates have invited him to speak, archaeologists and all that, have invited him to speak. And then others have protested him speaking there. And actually, he's had to be moved from one university to a public area or wherever, or from a public area to a secret area or whatever the case is. If he were coming to talk about the Tooth Fairy, and everybody knows the Tooth Fairy doesn't exist, nobody would have an issue. If we want to hear about the Tooth Fairy, nobody would care. But if professors are getting their, I want to say panties in a wad, and that's probably not the right thing to say on radio. But if somebody's getting all riled up because Michael Cremo is coming to town to tell this story, then either there's some truth in the story or there's something that in the story that someone doesn't want us to know, which makes me want to know it even more, which I, for that reason, and that, if not that alone, I am so excited for having Michael on the show today. So we're going to have him on. We're going to talk about these things and more as soon as we come back right after this.
Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWay's ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWay's ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWay's water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWay's water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
You can tell from my introduction there that I'm a little bit excited and excitable about these things, and rightly so. And hopefully we'll come down to the bottom of certain things here with Michael. Michael Cremo is also known as the Forbidden Archaeologist. He's hailed as a groundbreaking research pioneer and international authority on archaeological anomalies. His landmark bestseller, Forbidden Archaeology, first published in 1993, already is translated in 26 languages, challenged the very foundation of Darwinian evolution. Michael continues to, quote, dig up enigmatic discoveries in the fossil record and, quote, shake up accepted paradigms, exploring famous archaeological sites around the world, journeying to sacred places in India, appearing on national television shows in the United States and other countries, lecturing at mainstream science conferences, or speaking to alternative gatherings of global intelligentsia. He is also an independent historian of archaeology, and a member of the World Archaeological Congress and the European Association of Archaeologists. I am so happy to have Michael Cremo on the show. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, Felipe. Nice to be with you and all your listeners.
It's so great. We actually did meet at the Conscious Life Expo a couple months ago.
And, oh, really? That was just recently. Yeah.
Just recently here in Los Angeles. And that was exciting because not only had I heard you speak before, but it was wonderful to have so many people corroborate each other's work and yours, of course. So it seems momentum is growing around these kinds of theories, I hope.
Well, I think you're right about that, Filippo. I don't consider myself to be a lone ranger out there all by myself. I can see there are a lot of other researchers who are pursuing different aspects of these questions. There's a whole body of people that have become interested in these things. There are people doing their part, like yourself, to share these ideas and network people through the media and the internet. So I'm very positive about the direction things are going.
I'm glad about that, and let's talk about some of the directions we're going in. You know, it's interesting how on from your book and your website and all that, a picture alone, there is this huge giant skeleton, for example. There's just one little example, and it's a giant one. How come I've never seen this before? And what the heck is it? It looks like a big, big, big human.
Well, this is one of the topics of interest, how big are humans. Of course, you can find a lot of things on the web, you know, a lot of photographs of skeletons that are quite huge. But in many cases, in every case that I've been able to see, they've turned out to be Photoshop hoaxes. Now, I do believe that in the past, human beings of large size did exist. But there are many reports of such things, but what I try to do in my work is track them down, see if I can actually verify them by actually seeing the skeletal remains. And up to this point, I really haven't been able to do that, although I do believe that humans of large size did exist in the past. When I say of large size, I mean 9 or 10 feet tall or taller.
Okay.
And, you know, there are a lot of people today who are 7 feet tall. They're on the NBA basketball teams.
Right.
And there's even one or two people in the world today who are 8 feet tall, but there's no one 10 feet tall. Now, as I've tried to track these things down, some interesting things have happened. Once I was invited to New Zealand by someone who arranged for me to give some lectures there, and I landed in the airport in Auckland, and he told me, tomorrow we're going to see something very interesting. He told me a friend of mine since childhood is working at the Museum of Natural History in Auckland, big city in New Zealand, and he's going to show us the skeleton of a human being over 10 feet tall from a Pacific island. So I thought, finally, I'm going to see one of these things. And for me, it's very important to verify things. So we went to the museum the next morning. The gentleman met us, started taking us around, showing us the dinosaur bones, showing us this, showing us that. Finally, we asked him, what about the skeleton of the person, you know, 10 feet tall? And he said, I'm sorry, we can't see it. Now, I just had to think, well, what happened in 24 hours that he had told his friends since childhood that he was going to show this to us when we came to the museum, and then when we came there, he said he couldn't do it. All I can think of is that that morning before we came, he must have mentioned to some of his colleagues in the museum what he was going to do, and they told him not to do it. So it's all part of what I call forbidden archaeology.
Right.
Knowledge is sort of set aside, filtered out, in what I call a process of knowledge filtering.
Right. I mean, this relates to my tooth fairy story. Why is it such a mystery? Why could it be forbidden? Why would it be in your opinion, based on what you?
Well, of course, my main topic of research isn't giants. My main topic of research is archaeological.
I don't mean giants. I mean the archaeology. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the stuff that's forbidden. Right.
Yeah. The main reason that I get into these things is looking for how long humans have been present on Earth. According to the standard theories, human beings like us first appeared on Earth between 100,000 and 200,000 years ago. And before that, we're told by mainstream science, there were no human beings like us on this planet. There were simply more primitive ape-like human ancestors. And if you go back before that, there were some simple mammals. And before that, some reptiles. And before that, some amphibians. And before that, some fish. And before that, nothing, you know, chemicals. So it's a very materialistic picture of human origins. And what I've done in my work in archaeology, because it seems people are interested in what is the history of the human species? Not so many people care about what's the history of butterflies. We're human beings. We're interested in our own history. And what I've shown in my work is there's a lot of evidence showing that human beings like us have existed for millions and millions of years on Earth. There are human bones, human footprints, human artifacts going back many millions of years, which means we need new theories of human origins. But this evidence is not very well known. You're not going to find it in the standard textbooks. You'll find it in original scientific reports. But you have to dig to find these things. It's not going to be right there in the current textbooks. So there's a process of knowledge filtering that's going on, you know, determining what goes into the textbooks and what's kept out of the textbooks. And there are a lot of reasons for that. You were asking the reasons. First of all, I think it's, human nature. You know, for example, if I love somebody, and somebody tells me something bad about the person I love, I don't want to believe it. I may even become angry at the person who tells me these things because it just completely goes against my deeply held impressions of the person that I love. So today, many scientists are very much in love with their theories, especially the theories related to the origin of life and our human species. The Darwinian theories of human evolution. They like these very much. They love them. So if they hear something that goes against it, they just don't want to hear about that. But I think there are deeper reasons as well. I think it has to do with power. You know, there are different types of power in the world. There's political power, economic power, military power. There's also intellectual power. And we see that those who have power don't like to give it up, particularly those who have monopoly power. So the supporters of the current theories of human origins now have a government-enforced monopoly in the public school systems in this country and most countries in the world. So it's sort of natural. If somebody's got a monopoly on power in an institution, it's sort of natural that they don't want to give up that monopoly. They don't want to allow competing views. It's understandable. I don't think it should be going on. I think especially in a country that considers itself democratic and based on principles of freedom, there should be free expression of ideas in the education system, the full range of opinion about topics should be presented. It can be weighted according to, well, this is the majority view in science, that humans like us first came into existence 100,000 or 200,000 years ago. But there are others in the world of science, and I am in the world of science in the sense that I'm regularly presenting my ideas at universities, in scientific conferences, in scientific institutions. Sometimes my presentations are published in peer-reviewed scientific publications. So, but I'm not a majority voice, I'm a minority voice. But I think even the minority has rights. So I think students should be presented with a full range of ideas and then just let them make up their own minds about these things. The government shouldn't be endorsing one idea over another. That is not the correct way to do things. I think these are important questions. I mean, somebody might think, well, okay, whether humans were here for millions of years or 100,000 or 200,000 years, what difference?
It makes a huge difference.
Because the goals that we set for ourselves individually and collectively are depending on our sense of identity. For example, if I think I'm an American man, that's how I behave because that's my sense of identity. That's how I set my goals. That's how I set my values. And today, because of the monopoly they have in the education system, the supporters of the current theories are able to dictate to people the answers to these important questions. Who am I? Where did I come from? And they're giving very materialistic answers. Like one prominent evolutionist, Richard Dawkins, says in one of his books, what are we? We are survival machines, robot vehicles blindly programmed to preserve the selfish molecules known as genes. In other words, we're just machines made of molecules. We're evolved apes. This is what we are. They're very materialistic answers to these fundamental questions. Who am I? Where did I come from? So to me, it's no surprise that our whole worldwide human civilization has taken an extremely materialistic turn, so that we think that the main purpose of human existence is to produce and consume more and more material things. And the supporters of the current theory say not only are we machines made of matter, we're machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival.
Right.
So we tend to divide ourselves up into groups and fight with each other. And
right.
We overconsume the Earth's resources, and it creates like a whole, well, just look at the world. I don't have to describe it. You can see
right.
it every day
right.
for yourself. So I think one reason why things are the way they are is because of the ideas about identity that are being promoted in the education system. They're ideas of identity that are very favorable to huge financial, political, and corporate interest.
Wow.
These interests would just like to see people thinking about nothing other than the next gadget they're going to get, having a job that will allow them to produce more and more gadgets so they can buy more and more gadgets. There are forces in society that like to see things in that situation. They don't want to see people diverting their attention to other things. For example, what if we had a different explanation of what we are? What if, and this is something I touch on in my book, Human Devolution.
Right.
That what if we're told, well, we're not machines made of matter competing with each other for survival, like in some huge version of Hunger Games or something like that. But we're instead beings of pure consciousness that have somehow or other come in contact with matter, and that our real purpose in life shouldn't be to dominate, control, and exploit material resources, but it should be to develop the resource of consciousness, restore consciousness to its original pure state. That would mean a shift in our values. It would mean less human energy going into this competitive dog-eat-dog system of ever-increasing material production and consumption, which is destroying the environment and creating huge conflicts in the world for control of resources like oil and things like that, and destruction of natural resources. What if we had another set of values that would allow us to think, well, how can we live in this world in the most simple, natural, and efficient way possible? How can we live in this world in the most peaceful way possible, seeing others not as competitors but as fellow human beings? It would be a different kind of world, but there are huge forces in society that don't want to see that happen. They see more benefit for themselves in keeping people on this level of thinking they're machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival.
You know, Michael, you're reminding me of a biology teacher I had back in the ninth grade who started off the very first day of class telling us that on that day we all received an A, and that he expected us to be able to maintain that grade. And more people did better in his class because we all started from a place of we are A students, as opposed to the other way around. And so you're saying if instead of us coming from matter, we actually come from conscious spirit, we could actually be thinking more like conscious spirits.
Yes, if that's the sense of identity that was being promoted in our official education system, I think more people would be thinking like that. But I think the powers that control these things, they don't see that that would be of very much value to them. There's more to be gained from keeping people in under the impression that they're machines made of matter in competition with each other for survival. They can be manipulated more easily if they're in that state of consciousness.
Well, I'm sure the audience knows by now what I meant at the beginning of the show when I was excited and upset at the same time listening to this information, because it's like, why am I listening to this for the first time? I wish I had been told. I knew there was always something different than what I was taught to believe. We're talking to Michael Cremo, author of Forbidden Archaeology, actually author of several books. As a matter of fact, he just mentioned another one just now, Human Devolution, Devolution, not devil, but in devolution, as in devolving. So you can learn more about that. Each of those have specific websites, but if you go to mcremo.com, that's M, C like Charlie, R like Robert, E, M like Mary, O.com, you can find all the books there and more information, lectures, and ways to contact Michael and learn more about him and see him live yourself, as I did and had the pleasure to do so. Well, we're going to have the pleasure of getting to talk more with Michael as soon as we get back. Michael Cremo is our guest, author of Forbidden Archaeology. More with Michael right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
We're back. I'm Filippo Voltaggio, and we've been talking to Michael Cremo, author of Forbidden Archaeology. I'm thinking of Ancient Aliens because that's also where I came to know him, through the work of Giorgio Tsoukalos, who we've had on the show, and maybe you've seen Michael on a couple of those episodes that get aired every once in a while, because people, and more people, are discovering this information, and I am glad that more and more people are gravitating to people like our guest tonight, Michael Cremo, to learn about what maybe the truth either has been hidden or for whatever reason kept from us. And we're going to learn a little bit more here from Michael as we proceed. We've been talking about where do we come from and how long have we been here? And in his books, Forbidden Archaeology and Human Devolution, and actually several others that you can learn about at M. Cremo, C-R-M-E-O, mcremeo.com, you can learn about his theories that are now being substantiated by more and more science and more scientists. So, Michael, what if as humans... we've been around for millions of years. Would this, in your studies, this just came to me, would that mean that humans were around actually when the pyramids were built, and when dinosaurs were here and that kind of thing?
Yes. Of course, the pyramids don't go so far back in time. They're well within the normally accepted time of the existence of humans. But the dinosaurs, according to modern science, they became extinct about 65 million years ago when there was a worldwide catastrophe set off, according to scientists, by a comet or huge asteroid hitting the Earth. But they think that there weren't any humans existing during the time of the dinosaurs. But in the cases that I documented in my book, Forbidden Archaeology, I showed there are reports in scientific literature showing that humans were present before the time of the dinosaurs, during the time of the dinosaurs, and after, you know, the time of the dinosaurs. Mm. You know, most scientists today would say the dinosaurs came into existence about 250 million years ago and lasted to about 65 million years ago when they became extinct. But, you know, I looked into the whole history of archaeology, you know, back into the old reports and the things that haven't been published in the textbooks, and I found a report in a scientific journal called The Geologist in the year 1862, and it told of a human skeleton that had been found 90 feet below the surface of the ground in Macoupin County in the state of Illinois in America. And we got in touch with geologists from the state of Illinois. We asked them, okay, in Macoupin County, at a depth of 90 feet, how old are the formations there? And they said the formations down at that level are about 300 million years old. So that's from before the time of the dinosaurs,
right?
Even. And, you know, if there were just one or two of these reports, well, maybe you could just write them off as mistakes or whatever. But what I found in my work, when I looked into the whole history of archaeology, is that there are hundreds of these cases, hundreds of cases of human bones, human artifacts, human footprints going back tens of millions of years, hundreds of millions of years, from before the time of the dinosaurs, during the time of the dinosaurs, and after the time of the dinosaurs, coming all the way up to the present.
Wow. Well, you know, actually, in my referencing the pyramids, it wasn't that humans aren't considered to be around during that time. I guess what I was getting at was the fact that, you know, I was thinking back either to the giants or aliens or other races, or because it still baffles me that how could humans have been able to build those back then unless there was something else going on or somebody else.
Yeah. Now, that is something that I also believe. I think we're not alone in the cosmos. And this is something I got into on the Ancient Aliens show. I should first explain that a lot of my ideas are inspired by my studies in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India. And that's where I first encountered this idea that there were human populations on Earth millions and millions of years ago. It was something completely different than I'd learned from my teachers in high school or university. So I was thinking, is there any factual basis to these accounts that are found in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India and a lot of other different ancient wisdom traditions? Or is it all just mythology? So that's what got me looking into the history of archaeology. And I found actually there is archaeological evidence showing that humans existed millions of years ago. Now, another thing these ancient Sanskrit writings talk about, and a lot of the other ancient wisdom traditions talk about, is the idea that we're not alone in the universe, that there are extraterrestrial beings. And, you know, when I speak of extraterrestrials, I don't necessarily mean just other flesh and blood types of humans. I believe there are entities that have bodies made of more subtle elements and that live in more subtle dimensions or realms, including a completely spiritual dimension, and that there's, so really, as humans, we're part of the whole cosmic hierarchy of beings. We're not alone in the universe, and there's been contact between humans on this Earth and these extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional beings going back into the depths of history. So I would say, you know, if you look at what the Egyptians were saying about themselves, they had this idea. If you look at their art and their hieroglyphics, and you'll see that they had this conception that they were part of a whole cosmic hierarchy of beings. Now, people will have different names for these beings. They'll call them angels or gods or goddesses or whatever, but they're there. They were definitely part of the Egyptian worldview. They didn't think they were alone. And as far as they were concerned, and this is the view of many, you know, people in the ancient world, is that they were inspired and helped in their civilizations by, you know, these extraterrestrial beings. So I think that's a fact. It is a fact. And some of these ancient civilizations, particularly the one described in the ancient Sanskrit writings of India, they had spacecraft. In Sanskrit, they were called vimanas. And sometimes there are descriptions in the ancient Sanskrit writings of how humans on Earth received technologies from these higher beings, including spacecraft. And these are some of the things that I was talking about on that Ancient Aliens series where I appeared in some of the episodes and, you know, segments, brief segments.
I might have to watch that, and I haven't seen that one. But it just all of a sudden, as you're saying this, it's reminding me of something that I've been thinking about for a while. How maybe now history is repeating itself, because how we went from in 1964 a computer being as big as a three-story building and only being able to do a few mathematical equations, to all of a sudden, just a few short 40 years later, we're holding computers in the palm of our hand, which are much more powerful than that could ever have wished to have been.
Well, I mean, this takes us really out to the fringes, but there are, people who suggest that there has been, in these recent times, some kind of extraterrestrial technology transfer. There was a Colonel Corso, for example, who wrote a book explaining that that's how some of this technology was acquired. It is interesting that there are reports of such things today, and in the past, people in these ancient civilizations were reporting that they got a lot of the help with their technologies from what they called gods, higher beings who exist in other dimensions or other parts of the cosmos. So that's something that I believe. It sounds really strange in terms of modern science, but even within the scientific world, there have been some scientists who have been willing to consider things like that. For example, Dr. John Mack, who was the head of the psychiatry department at the Harvard University Medical School. He would hear reports from some patients that they had been abducted by extraterrestrials. And he decided to look into this topic. He was wondering, are these people psychotic or neurotic? But he studied these people, and he concluded they're not psychotic or neurotic. They're displaying the signs of post-traumatic stress, like a soldier in a battle or somebody who'd undergone a huge accident might, display signs of post-traumatic stress disorder. And he determined that these people are not displaying symptoms of mental disease. They're displaying the symptoms that a person would display if they'd undergone some traumatic event in their life that actually happened, not some hallucination or something of that sort. So he concluded they're telling the truth, and he wrote a book about it. And he concluded, as he looked deeper and deeper into the topic, he said, it appears ever more likely that we exist in a multi-dimensional cosmos that is filled with all kinds of beings, intelligences, gods, entities. Now, when he started writing things like that, his colleagues at Harvard University went ballistic. They were saying, we can't have a Harvard professor saying this kind of thing. So they convened an academic court to try to get him removed from his position. Now, he fought that successfully. But then I met him once in Glastonbury, England. We had both been invited to speak at a conference there, a New Age sort of conference, and we were agreeing to stay in touch with each other, but shortly after that, he died in a kind of mysterious automobile accident in England. So the reason I'm bringing him up is that, I was talking about extraterrestrial beings and contacts and things like that, and some people think, well, that's just totally outside the realm of science, but there are scientists who have investigated these things and come to positive conclusions about them. They're not the majority voice in the world of science. They're a minority voice, but they are there. And one thing we learn from the history of science is that at a particular point in time, what the majority is thinking may turn out to be wrong. And the the minorities, the minority opinion may turn out to be the actual truth.
And that has happened many times in history as well. So, absolutely. This whole conversation, especially here at the end when you say, you know, now we're going to the fringe, it baffles me, because on some level I go back to my niece and the tooth fairy. It's like, okay, I want to know the truth already. I'm old enough with this pretense that here we are, very intelligent person like yourself and this other scientist and all that are either vilified or perhaps even killed or considered to be crazy or tried to, you know, when we're actually trying to have an honest conversation about what we know to be true.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes, you know, I think, well, it would be nice to be living in a time when my ideas were the mainstream ideas that were being, you know, taught, you know, in the official education institutions and things like that. Well, maybe that would be nice, but I think it's also exciting to be living in a time when my ideas aren't the mainstream ideas.
Good for you.
Earlier in the show, you know, like I'm calling myself the forbidden archaeologist.
Right.
That's the name of the column I write for Atlantis Rising magazine. It's also the title of my latest book, which is a collection of those columns. But, you know, if I wasn't being forbidden a couple times a year, I'd start thinking, well, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Maybe I'm just getting too soft. You know, I'm losing my edge.
So you've made lemonade.
Yeah.
Out of the lemons.
So
good for you.
So I don't know, there's, like I said, there's advantages and disadvantages to living in a time and place where the ideas that one personally has about important questions aren't the mainstream ideas. They're the fringe ideas or the, I mean, not to myself. I mean, I consider myself to be mainstream in terms of my own self, but
right.
In terms of the opinion of the larger dominant forces in society today, I would be considered, you know, not part of the mainstream consensus.
Of course. So, but Michael, I truly appreciate that perspective. I like it very much. I think I'm going to have to ponder it. It'll probably come up during our producer's wrap here in just a little bit, but it's time for us to wrap. And I do want to remind everybody that they can go to mcremo.com, mcremo.com to find out more about you, to get your books. Actually, I know you're going on a Mayan Galactic Alignment cruise here during December 21, 2012. So that sounds really exciting. And any last words before we have to cut to a commercial?
Well, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to have this conversation with you and with your listeners this evening. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to meeting you again in person soon and doing this again. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thank you. Michael Cremo, mcremo.com. We'll be back with our producer, Mark Leger, for our producer's wrap right after this.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook, and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
And this is our producer's wrap. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and our producer, Mark Legere, is here with us. We've been talking to Michael Cremo. I've been talking to him. Mark, you've been listening. What's the perspective from the just the ears?
You know, the more I listen, the more aggravated I
see.
It's a touch point with me because I think it shines a light on how backwards we as humans seem to have it on this planet. These questions, some of the things that he has explored, and the questions that are even being asked, whether they're right or wrong, the fact that the word forbidden would come up is a travesty. You know, to be on this planet, to not really know how the heck we got here, to have all these completely different perspectives on when and how everything from, 6,000 years ago to, you know, the theories of evolution and everything in between. But then I've always said, or it was what started to challenge me and when I started to open my eyes, is when I was hearing things and I was reading things in my science book or what I was told and what I was fed that were clearly at odds with other things that are out there that are being discovered and or are being learned. And you're not allowed to ask questions. Mm. And so you wonder how much more of this. You know, you go back and you look at these cave drawings and you go back and you look at, you know, thank gosh for the internet because now people are comparing all of the ancient written works.
It's nothing, you're just not allowed, you're made fun of.
Well, made fun of, buried, fired.
Yeah.
Discredited, forbidden archaeology, discredited in the world of science or whatnot because of the powers, the guidelines, and then therefore you will or will not succeed and therefore get credited and therefore get a raise and therefore be able to feed your kids, right? So it challenges your whole ability to even exist so they won't go down those roads. So then you have truly visionary and gutsy explorers out there like Michael and so many others who have really broken ground in these areas. But, you know, for all I know, we still haven't figured out how to drill down a couple of miles into this Earth's crust. But yet our science books since day one have told us we know exactly what the center of the Earth is.
Right.
So that alone, I said, well, how do we know exactly what is in the center of the Earth? Well, we don't. We guessed. Okay, now what else are you telling me that is fact, which is actually a guess, and or is part of a story that makes it easier for us to play a certain role that will then feed the system, that'll keep us in order, that'll keep us, you know, present in this economical environment?
You know, you just said play. And I was brought back to, for just a split second, of how we kids, some of us kids, would play when we were kids. Like, there were certain games, like, when you figured it out, you purposely didn't tell anybody else. It's like, shh, no, because then you watch everybody else figure it out, and then you laugh at each other, or that was part of the game. And I kind of made the connection with Michael Cremo saying, you know, if it wasn't forbidden, then, you know, then it wouldn't be fun for me anymore, kind of thing. So what if it's up to us to figure it out and then start laughing? But people are getting hurt in the meantime. It's not funny. So I'm in this dichotomy.
Well, it goes beyond that. At what level are it? We've seen it. We've seen it in the neighborhood. We see it in the neighborhood playgrounds. We see it on the recess playground. We see it in our schools, in our jobs, anywhere there's a group, there's some sort of hierarchy. There's somebody in control. There's somebody managing the information. Mm-hmm. So what says that doesn't go to the very top? What says that the bigger the groups, the bigger the control, the larger the agenda, whatever it may be, to manage the information, to manage the story that's being told, to manage the branding of that entity? Mm. And therefore, any of these kind of things would start to challenge And even if the at this point it's not so malicious, but when you have all of that invested in telling a certain story or becoming or creating a certain brand or whatever the case may be, and one of these new discoveries comes up, the thought is almost like, well, that was then, and this is what we have now. So why disrupt the story, right? Because we got, you know, it would do all of these other, and that's where fear starts to step in. Mm. So then it really challenges whether or not, you know, because people automatically think conspiracies, oh, it's bad or for a bad reason. But I could also see the fact that once the snowball is gone, you know, once the train's in motion, right? There's a lot of fear there in terms of, well, it'll probably disrupt things too much. It'll create too much fear. It'll be too much of the distraction to actually ask these questions and or challenge what we thought was true.
Kind of like when a lie gets out of hand or a joke gets out of hand, then you don't know how to bring it back. It's like, you know, wow, I meant it as a joke, and not that this, you know, but I meant it as a joke, and now people have gotten hurt by it, and I don't know how to go back and say, it's like it's almost more hurtful to say it was a joke.
But that coupled with our own ability to be ignorant, you know, the fact that I've just never been one to not ask a question. You tell me that we don't have technology today that can move these 20, 30,000, 70,000 ton laser precision cut stones across the nation's divide where the rock originated from potentially and put them in place within the we can't do that with today's technology, but we'll just go on about it like, okay, we can't answer it, so let's not pay attention. Whereas to me, it just seems so exciting to feverishly understand more is going on rather than just brush it under the big rock.
And to think we could actually learn from that. And like you said, to believe that we've been here millions of years or to know, it just makes my mind just like go a mile a minute going, well, what have we learned? If you know, what did we do back then? And what were we thinking? And it's a whole different mindset.
Yeah, but that would,
for me,
that would interrupt the shopping.
It would interrupt the shopping. You're absolutely right. Because if we've been able to exist for millions of years without crap, we could probably exist 50 or 60 or 80. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting. It's that not only, you know, you start to point your fingers at, is it yourself or is it your neighbor, you know, but we are willing. We get caught up in this and then we get addicted to stuff. And that stuff is a distraction. And then we live in the middle of this. And when we're in the moment, at one point we'll say, oh, wow, that's exciting. And you watch these shows and you hear this information and it challenges everything you believe in. And then you go right back and go to sleep and get up and put your Oxfords on and drive your Mercedes or your Yugo or whatever it is to wherever you're going and do it all over again.
Yeah. Yeah, because we have to live today because we're here now and this is how we're doing it. Well, this is what we did today. We had some great conversation. And Mark, our conversation alone could be five different shows. And maybe someday it will. In the meantime, we have had this show on the BBS Radio Network. And I'm grateful to Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark Lejeur and to all of you for listening and being a part of this show. And to our engineer, Seth Hendricks. I am Filippo Voltaggio saying thank you all for being a part of this show and the beautiful changes we all like to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change the world. Now's the time.